On this week's show, some predicted a blue wave, some talk about it being a red wave. We'll break down the tsunami of voters we're seeing at the polls. Also, Texas Secretary of State saying, Houston, we have a problem. We'll also get an update about some big developments in the Texas House Speaker's race. In Irview, we'll meet the folks who are working to end forced annexation in Texas, and we'll close with a commentary on the true roots of our system of government. Welcome back, Patriots, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio, coming to you from the 1836 studios. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. Follow me on the old Twitter website at TweetTonyMac. You can find us on the web, www.texasscorecard.com, and you can subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud. I wanted to hit in this week on the news, all these predictions from the Democrats of a big blue wave kind of being met with a bit of a red wave as well, a bit of tsunami of votes. For that, I got a little breakdown from Brandon Walton's Capitol Bureau Chief. A lot of turnout as we're headed into Election
Day.
Yes,
a lot of turnout. With early voting in the rearview mirror and Election Day coming up on Tuesday, a lot of turnout on both sides, Republicans and Democrats across the state of Texas, pretty much throughout the state. I mean, we've seen really big, big numbers, especially in the urban areas.
Yeah, not just, so you get a bit, all these numbers coming in from these top, most populous counties in the state. Doesn't matter whether it's Democrat area, Republican area, blowing the numbers out of the water, basically matching turnout from 2016 here in a 2018 midterm.
Right, and that was a presidential year, which you always expect to have a lot more turnout, and 2016 was a record year in and of itself, but way outdoing the numbers from the last midterm, which was in 2014.
Yeah, now, so one of the big stories this cycle has been Beto O'Rourke and the challenge to Senator Ted Cruz, whether Beto can upset the Republican. Democrats haven't won in the state in forever, basically, since the early 90s. Question was there. Polling looking pretty good for Ted.
Yes, I mean, this is going to be a race that's fought until the end, but as more and more polls come out closer and closer to Election Day, pretty consistently, we see Cruz leading O'Rourke by 5-6 points, sometimes even more.
Certainly more close than Republicans are used to being comfortable
right.
with. A race that does look to be kind of getting to be a blowout. Mm-hmm. Governor Abbott blowing Lupe Valdez out of the water in all of the polling we're seeing. Seems like he's focusing his efforts on trying to help other Republicans win up and down the ballot.
Yes, that's something we've seen from Governor Abbott. His race pretty much being over the minute Lupe Valdez became the Democrat nominee after they had a clown car of unserious candidates in their primary. And we see Abbott spending a lot of money, though, doing advertising, doing get-out-the-vote stuff, but not just for him, for Republicans all the way down the ballot, so for state reps and so on down.
I thought it was funny. He invited Nancy Pelosi
yes.
to come to the state?
Yeah, so his campaign actually sent out a letter to the Texas Democrat Party and said, hey, if you want to invite Nancy Pelosi over because she's so representative of the socialist values that the Democrat Party wants to bring to Texas, he's happy to, his campaign will help foot the bill. Bring her down.
we'll pay to bring her here. That'll be a get out the vote effort for Republicans. Well, interesting thing, though, is certainly high turnout, historically high turnout in this election. So voters out there, if they're kind of going, well, do I need a vote? Should I vote? Yeah.
your vote's going to count in this election for sure.
Next, let's go down to Charles Blaine in the Bayou City. Charles, Secretary of State coming in this week saying there's a problem with the voter rolls down in Harris County.
Yeah, Tony, it's actually really interesting. So the Secretary of State has issued an opinion. Allegedly, it's the first one on election law this year, really. And it's saying that there is a problem with our voter rolls and that, you know, our local voter registrar isn't doing what it takes to fix it.
Yeah, and so this all stems, we've covered this a little bit on the program over the past few months, but there's a guy down there, Alan Vero, who's been leading a group to try and clean up the voter rolls, saying, hey, we've got people on the rolls who are registered at P.O. boxes, registered at commercial addresses, places that they're not supposed to be registered, and said, hey, you know, voter registrar, you need to do something about this, and they've been fighting back. Tell us a little more about what's going on there.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. Alan Vera, great champion for election integrity, did the painstaking work of going through a number of registrations and matching them up with publicly known places that are not residences, commercial mailbox places. And so when he submitted these, the voter registrar started to look into them and send out notices, but the county attorney told her to stop and said that it was fine and that, Alan Vera didn't have standing. So luckily, Alan had the ear of State Senator Paul Betancourt, and he pulled him in, and Betancourt asked for an opinion from the Secretary of State. So now this is where we are.
Yeah, and so to lay out the partisan makeup of this dispute, you've got Alan Vera with local Republican Party and Paul Betancourt, right, a local Republican senator. These county attorney, the voter registrar, Democrats, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, both Democrats.
Okay, and so they're refusing to do anything about this. The Secretary of State getting involved now saying, hey, you should have been trying to verify these people were actually supposed to be registered to vote.
Right. And what's interesting is the Secretary of State is, affirming the fact that Alan did have standing to challenge these and then coming down hard against the local registrar saying that she should have begun going through these and sending out the cards. I mean, and here we are now, our second week of early voting, and we're getting this very strongly worded opinion saying that she's failing her duty to keep our election, as accurate and with the highest integrity that it could have.
Yeah, that's the worst part, is we're so late in the process now that I guess what we know is that there are people, at least on the rolls, who appear not to be properly registered. That casts some doubt on, elections can be close and it can cast some real doubt.
And, that's what Senator Betancourt was saying, was that, some of these elections in parts of the county like Baytown and elsewhere can be decided on a handful of votes. So actually, as we speak, I'm on my way to a press conference that he's holding right now at one of these locations where they found numerous people who are registered. I think this location, there was about 40 people registered.
Wow.
So they're going through and they're going to keep harping on this until something happens. I mean, State Senator Betancourt said that he's expecting a response from the registrar, but if not, he does plan on pursuing this next session.
Yeah, I think it's definitely not the end of the story. There's going to have to be certainly some more reform. Appreciate your reporting about it, Charles.
No problem. Thank you.
Finally, to talk about some developments in the race for Texas House Speaker, I've got Carrie Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Some big developments down at the Capitol over the last week or so.
That's right, Tony. After an apparent meeting by about 40 Republicans down here in Austin, a secret ballot and other things led to the departure of one Republican, House Appropriations Chair John Zerwas, from the Speaker's race, and the entrance of another one, Speaker Pro Tem Dennis Bonin of Angleton.
Yeah, and so Bonin is the number two under outgoing Speaker Joe Strauss. He has served as Speaker Pro Tem the last at least couple of sessions, and kind of not a real surprise that he'd get in the race, but a surprise entrance at least.
That's right, Tony. Currently the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee in the Texas House, the tax writing committee that actually was the committee through which property tax reform went or didn't go
right.
in the regular session. Not surprising to see that he would get in. Is surprising to see that he would get in so late in the race.
Yeah, so you had this happen, and there was, for a moment there, looked like a ton of momentum, and then maybe a little bit of a fizzling and walking back. Very interesting to see some lists circulating out there of alleged supporters. You really haven't seen this by any other candidate so far.
That's right, Tony. There was apparently a tidal wave of support that was rumored, but then when a list did leak, it only contained about 20 names, and three of those were Democrats supposedly backing Dennis Bonin, which really, I think, shook tremors through the rest of the GOP caucus and through grassroots around the state.
Now, you saw a couple of these Democrats say, I don't know, they weren't really saying they're not supporting him. They're just kind of saying, well, I don't know, we haven't committed or anything like that. This is concerning to Republicans who are saying, hey, we want a Republican Speaker of the House in Texas.
Well, that's absolutely right, Tony. The biggest problem in Texas, of course, has been the coalition of liberal Republicans and Democrats that has governed the Texas House under Joe Strauss for the past decade. It was the hope that the Freedom Caucus-led effort to amend the caucus bylaws and elect the new Speaker of the Texas House kind of as a nominee of the Republican caucus selected in caucus without the interference of Democrats, that you would have a real Republican Speaker. And to see Dennis Bonin and other potentially other candidates going out and courting Democrat support is very concerning for grassroots conservatives.
I think this is something that voters immediately need to turn their attention to after the election. There will be a few weeks in there before the caucus meets where, you know, the Democrats will be trying to get involved and trying to disrupt things. So we're definitely going to have to keep an eye on it.
That's absolutely right, Tony. December 1st, the anticipated meeting of the House Republican Caucus, where they will presumably choose the nominee.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's my pleasure to welcome on the program this week a couple of grassroots leaders who are leading the effort to stop forced annexation in Texas. Thanks for joining us, Laura Hester and Bryson Boyd.
Yes, good morning.
Well, thank you guys for coming in. This is an issue that I think a lot of listeners out there don't necessarily know about. It's not on everybody's ballot, but it's something to be on the lookout for headed into the election booth on election day this November. Several different counties, including your two counties, have propositions on the ballot where voters have an opportunity to say, I want to have a say in whether there can be annexation, municipal annexation in my county. And you folks are leading up the effort on that. Laura, tell us a little bit about, just give us a thumbnail sketch of what this effort is. What are you working on there? And you're in Parker County, right?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your campaign in Parker County to stop forced annexation.
Okay. So right now we are in phase three. We fought an annexation last summer. Then we collected petition signatures to get this proposition put on the ballot. And now we're in the campaign phase. And we're really just trying to educate all the voters in Parker County about the proposition. The way it's worded is pretty difficult to understand. It asks about tier one versus tier two, and are you for or against that? And, you know, for those people that have not heard anything about this proposition, that wording is very confusing right this minute. So we're really just trying to educate.
Yeah, Bryson, you're in a Wise County and likewise kind of fought a municipal annexation there and then are engaged in this campaign. What are some of the struggles there? I mean, so what does this mean? Tier one versus tier two. You're fighting to make your county a tier two county, but to somebody who's not initiated, what does that mean and what will that mean for them?
So simply put, moving to a tier two county will eliminate the forced annexation abilities of municipal government. That is the quick nitty gritty of what becoming a tier two county entails. So the main thing is to remove the city's ability to forcibly annex property, which shouldn't even be an issue. It shouldn't, it's very un-Texan-like. So moving to tier two is what we're trying to accomplish, to remove the forcible annexation ability from the city government.
Yeah, you know, so for years we've heard of this problem going on around the state where a city will come in and decide, you know, they have certain bounds currently, and then there are folks who live outside of the city limits, and without any say-so from those folks, they will go out and grab them up, and all of a sudden somebody who lives outside the city of Austin suddenly lives inside the city of Austin. Somebody who lives outside the city of Houston suddenly lives inside the city of Houston. They have to pay taxes. They have to participate in that particular city government whenever they maybe want to be part of something else or part of no city at all. And so you've had these things going on. Well, the legislature of course passed a bill this last session, and it ended that practice caucus in the big counties, the very most populous areas of the state. But in areas like yours, it actually put the onus on citizens to say, hey, we want to opt in. And so what have you been doing in terms of organizing your neighbors to actually bring this thing to a head, to actually make it happen and bring the question in front of voters?
Well, first we created a Facebook page and started sharing and got the word out that this was an issue. And then once we created a group, we started hitting different community organizations. We set up at fairs, at just local, just different local events. And we had the petitions there, and we would set up booths and ask people and just educate them, ask them if they would sign. They had to be registered voters. And each county needed to get 10% of their registered voters to sign this petition.
Oh, well, that's a lot of signatures.
it could be, yes, depending on the population of your county. So once all those signatures were collected, when you do a petition like this, you get 6 months to complete that and get it turned in to the elections office. Then they have 30 days to verify those signatures, and then it goes to the commissioner's court of your county, and those commissioners vote to add it to the ballot. So, you know, it was 6 months hard work collecting those signatures.
Now, have you seen a lot of opposition? To me, I think the effort here seems like a challenge of education. It's hard to imagine someone would say, well, you know, I have an opportunity to have a say in whether I'm annexed into a city or whether some other area is annexed into my city. I have an opportunity to have a say on that sort of thing, but I just don't want to have a say in a future election. That seems weird. I mean, is there really any pushback on the substance of what y'all are pushing for here?
I haven't received a whole lot of pushback in Wise County. The biggest thing is education. People get confused, and people think that we're part of, you know, trying to cut the hands off of the city. And once they realize and understand that we're not, we're just trying to make it fair for everyone. There's even people inside the city that are for it. So we haven't had a lot of pushback at all.
Yeah, most people are for this. Once you explain, you know, a tier one county is a county where the cities can forcibly annex areas of land, and the property owners don't have a say in that. They just get annexed. With a tier two status, when a city wants to annex, the property owners inside the annexation area will actually get a vote. So they get to help to make that decision. So it's basically just giving the rights back to the property owners. And nobody is against that, really. I mean, if you own property, you would like to have a say on what happens with that property.
So tell me a little bit, let's go to you first, Bryson. Tell me a little bit about the situation there in Wise County and with Bridgeport. Why shouldn't the city of Bridgeport just be able to grab your home and your neighbors' homes up and say they're part of the city? I think a lot of times you hear the city say, oh, well, we have to provide ambulance services or fire services, you know, or water or some other kind of thing, that we already have to provide a service to these folks, so they should have to pay taxes into the city just like anybody else. Why is that not the case? Why are they wrong to want to swallow up certain areas around the city without a vote?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily that it's wrong to. I mean, I'm all for a city growing. I actually live inside the city of Bridgeport, so I'm kind of a little different than all the other people that it was their actual home. But the biggest thing is the checks and balances. You know, I went to the post office and picked up a letter from the city of Bridgeport, a certified letter, and inside that letter says that we would be annexed in within 90 days. And that isn't right. That shouldn't, that's our business. That's our livelihood. And we shouldn't be forced to make that, you know, have to take that decision. And just sending a certified letter, like what happened to all the other counties pretty much, you know, isn't the right way to do it. If the city wanted to annex, they needed to have the checks and balances. They needed to come to us and say, we want to do this. you know, and provide you services. The problem with providing services out to established areas is that we already have services such as water, sewer, electric.
Sure.
You know, we already have those services, and so the cities are not obligated to provide those services, even though we'd be paying city taxes.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's funny when you think about it. People who live outside of a city, well, they didn't vote for the mayor or the city council. They didn't vote for those folks, but then they are making decisions that affect them. And there's just something that just strikes me as a little off about that. Laura, in Parker County with Weatherford, what's the situation there? Why is Weatherford trying to grab up territory around its city limits?
Well, ours was a little different. You know, Weatherford is growing. Parker County is one of the fastest growing counties in the state. And actually, two smaller cities, I guess, or towns outside of Weatherford, they had decided to incorporate. Brock was one of the areas one summer. And then the next summer, the little town of Peaster wanted to incorporate and become their own cities. So I guess that kind of scared the city of Weatherford, and they thought, gosh, we need to grab this area before they become a city and grow themselves and want to take this area in for their tax base. So what I understood is that's why the city of Weatherford were reaching out a little further, was to try to pull those areas in to block the new little cities that were starting to form.
Hmm. Interesting. So there's a little competition for local power there. Parker County, Wise County, not the only places in the state that have these Tier 2 ballot propositions on the ballot this November. Real quick, kind of take us through where else is this effort going on? Where else are folks campaigning to stop forced annexation?
Well, we've got Paul and Peggy Jones in Johnson County. They started the group there and were able to get their signatures. And then we've got Ed O'Neill and Mark Byrne in Freestone County. They have done an awesome job there. That's south, closer to Houston area, I believe. And then we've got another lady down south that we just heard about, Marie, and that is Atascosa County.
Oh, yeah, Atascosa County, that's right.
I almost pronounce that wrong every time. And they just jumped on board. They did their annexation. I don't know if they fought an annexation, but they did their petition and got all of their stuff done all by themselves. We didn't know anything about their group. We actually found them by searching on Facebook and found their Facebook group. And got them on board a couple of weeks ago. The Texas Association of Realtors came aboard a couple of months ago, and they told us that once we got to our campaign phase, they would support us and help us, you know, with signs and flyers, and they've done radio ads, and they've been a huge, tremendous asset. I don't know that we would be in this place, you know, in such a good position to win this election without their involvement. So once we found Marie, we hooked them up with the Texas Association of Realtors, and so they now have fines and all the cool things.
Well, so tell, you know, we're running low on time here, but tell us, where can listeners get connected with you, with your organizations, if they wanted to do it? This is an option moving forward. I think there's counties that are doing it in the next cycle, so there's still time. This is not a one-off deal. So if other counties want to get involved, how can they get connected with you and learn more about what they need to do?
So our main... We have website that has all the counties on it. It says www.stopforceannexation.com. And from there, you can go to each of the counties. There's a selection at the top and in the middle where you can go to the individual county's Facebook pages. The biggest way to get involved locally is through the Facebook pages. Even if you don't have Facebook, those are, it's all public, so you can get on there.
Well, that's good information. Well, so listeners out there, be on the lookout on your ballot. This is something to be excited about voting on. And thank you, Laura, and thank you, Bryson, for joining us and explaining a little bit about what you're up to. And thank you for being involved in your communities and being leaders there to protect your rights and your neighbors' rights. Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan was recently in Jerusalem on business. In this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, he shares some thoughts on the issues that unite all of us.
I recently found myself sipping coffee in Jerusalem's old city. I was struck by one thing everyone there has in common with each other and with people in Texas. And it's one thing all of us take for granted. With the Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. We're all living under a system of self-governance that entered the world in Israel. It's the system of government God intended for his people, but they rejected. When the people of Israel entered the land promised to their fathers, they took control of it. The most notable feature of their centralized government is that there was not one. God was their king, and the law was there to govern their daily affairs. They were a self-governing people, united in a way Israel never would be again. Yet despite several hundred years of relative peace and prosperity, or I guess perhaps because of it, the Israelites looked around and realized to their horror that they were different from everyone else, which of course was always exactly the point. They realized every other nation around them had a strong man, a king who would lead them. And so they entreated the prophet Samuel to find and anoint one. Well, Samuel, acting at God's direction, pleaded with the people not to pursue such a path. His counsel is recorded in 1 Samuel 8, but it goes something like this. God told Samuel to tell the people that a king would draft their sons into his armies to fight unnecessary wars. He said a king would take their daughters to be his servants. He would take their best land and their best produce. He said it would be horrible. And the people went for it anyway. They dove in, rejecting God and the government he gave them. Self-governance vanished into antiquity, with people suffering under the burden of the centralized government they had desired. It would be more than 2,500 years before the wisdom of self-governance would be rediscovered and tried again. Our founding fathers knew from Scripture that simply setting up a new King George in the new world would be a fool's errand. They wanted to pursue authentic liberty, not an American-made yoke. Hence the American experiment. The hallmark of our system is that everyone is subservient only to the law. No one, not a president, not a governor, no one stands above it. These principles have found root in nations around the globe in the intervening years. When Israel achieved independence in the mid-20th century, their founders had the opportunity to merely mimic the world around them and install yet another king, another strong man, another leader. Yet they chose a different way. While absent a constitution, modern Israel is a republic built on clearly defined laws respecting individual liberty. Is it perfect? No. Could they do better? Yes. As could we. Now, we all know the story of Benjamin Franklin being asked what form of government they had chosen at the Constitutional Convention. He said, "A republic, if you can keep it." Well, Israel faces a daily existential threat to their expression of a self-governing system of government. They're literally surrounded by people living in countries with kings and dictators who wake up and pledge death to Israel every day. That has a clarifying effect on Israel's sense of national purpose, and possibly as a result, it's why Israelis are more involved in government affairs on average than Americans. While Israel faces existential threats from the outside, the threat we face is from within. Across America, and even in Texas, we find institutions infected with cronies seeking to profit off government, and bureaucrats who view themselves as a special ruler class rather than servants of the people. But it has been the people who've allowed the weed of cronyism to grow unchecked, watered with our own civic apathy. It's said politics is the art of compromise. Now, that's a lie. It's told with the smug self-satisfaction of those who desire to be masters. In a self-governing system, the art of compromise always works against individual liberty and undermines self-governance. always. In our system of government, politics must be focused on expanding liberty and reducing the power of centralized authorities. Self-governance as a political philosophy is rooted in God's practical desire for people to be free of external restraint so they can worship Him and be all He designed them to be. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Thanks for listening, and join us back here next week as we break down the results of the November elections.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.